The master praised the dishonest steward for his astuteness. For the children of this world are more astute in dealing with their own kind than are the children of light. The master, you will note, did not praise the dishonest steward for his dishonesty. In that parable, that story, he was not praising dishonesty. What he was saying was that those who deal in things of this world, be it money or business or whatever, those who deal in the things of this world are very, very astute in the worldly things, and they are not so sharp, so astute in things that are not worldly, so the spiritual realm. I'm not talking just about religion, I'm talking about our spiritual selves. And Jesus is using this parable in a challenging way to say that if only we would put the energy and the talent into working on our spiritual lives, the insight and the cleverness, if we would only put that amount into working on our spiritual life, the same amount that people who work in money a lot of the time, that tainted thing, they're very astute on how to manage it and keep an eye on it and keep control of it. And that's the point of the first part of the parable. The short part of the gospel printed in your bulletin is really a series of short excerpts from the book of Proverbs primarily. They're just short little sayings like bumper stickers, no person can be the master of two, etc. So the point that only gains its emphasis when we think of what is that parable about. This dishonest steward, but he's clever. And put that cleverness to some good use. And that cleverness, when it comes to money, seems to be very, very effective. Now, why in our spiritual life can't we be so effective? Why can't we put that energy into gaining a more wholesome, fulsome relationship with God and our neighbour? We manage our bank accounts and our business so well, that tainted thing, money, but we mismanage our relationships so easily. And that's the difference that is there. You will end up hating one and loving another. Somehow or other, as you've often heard me say, we need to find the balance. And money in itself is not a bad thing. It can be, but it's not in itself. In the moral world, it's what we do with it or what we don't do with it that becomes a moral issue for us. And very often that may even affect our relationships within family or our relationships within the workplace. And the headlines are very often full, aren't they, of people who have done terrible things in business because they were given an opportunity, a business opportunity, quite often not even their own business. And then they worked hard and they got ahead, but that was never enough. And then they worked harder, quite often at the cost of their family, because they weren't there, because they were working harder, and they got ahead, but that wasn't enough. And they go, and it gets to a stage where nothing is enough. And so if we put that energy into working on our relationships, and particularly our relationship with God, we would find that, as the second reading, that great second reading, St. Paul writing to Timothy, says, there would be no arguments, there would be no anger. We would lift our hands and there would be peace in the world. But our focus is very often on something else. And that material thing, what we call worldliness, is the distraction. It's what derails us in our relationships very often. And that starts as something quite small in the workplace. It may start as something quite small at home, something rather insignificant. Mum and Dad are busy working and Mum leaves her purse open and a $2 falls out. And so the child takes the $2 and doesn't tell Mum. That's okay. It's not. But then, 2 weeks later, Dad leaves his wallet on the kitchen table late at night, and there's a corner of a $5 note sticking out. The child comes along. Oh, they won't, Dad won't miss that, and knocks off the $5. And then it goes from there. It starts as something small, and then it starts to take over. I remember the story of the master walking through a forest. And he has some disciples with him, some followers with him. And the master says to one of them, "See that little oak sapling over there? Go and pull that up." So the disciple goes over and he pulls it up with one hand. And then they walk on a bit further, and then the master says, "See that sapling over there, that oak sapling, that bigger one? Go and pull that up." So he goes over, and he needs two hands to pull up this one because it's a bit bigger. And then they walk on, of course, and then there's a third one. He says, "Go and pull that one up, that small tree, pull that one up." And the fellow goes over, the disciple goes over, and puts his hand, and he can't get it up. So he calls a couple of his mates in, the other disciples, and together they can get this tree out of the ground. And then, of course, they move on and there's a big tree there. He says, "Now go and pull that one up." And they can't budge it. They can't move it because the roots of that tree are so embedded in the earth. It starts as something small and we can easily get rid of it. But the longer we leave it, the deeper those evil roots go into our life, and they're hard, and it almost comes to the stage where it's impossible to be able to pull that up, whatever that tree might be in your life. And if it's a financial thing, that is particularly troublesome. There is that saying, of course, that for those who have been given much, much will be expected of them. Now, we don't have to think in terms just of monetary things. But I can bring the two together in one bit of a headline this week, where Roger Federer, who was well known to anybody who likes tennis, said that he's resigning from competitive tennis, from the international circuit. My understanding, I did a little bit of hunting around, was that he had amassed a fortune of $114 million at one stage through tennis. He's talented, and he's a good person, he's talented. He is to be the first sports billionaire, it seems to me. Now, that headline alone could be, wow, you know, like he's talented and he's got all of this money and stuff. What people don't realise that he has given away to form schools, to build schools, particularly in Africa, he's given away $53 million to establish education opportunities for underprivileged kids, not just in Africa, but a lot of his foundation is based in Africa. So we don't always know that what's behind the headline. Certainly there was money there, but much was given to him, and he is expected in his own moral world to give much as well. I see a similar thing, and I know, sorry, I'm overdoing the sporting metaphors, but with Ashley Barty as well. Now, I don't know her financial situation, I wouldn't have a clue, but she became world number one in the tennis world, and she retired as world number one with a wonderful dignity that was respectful of her Indigenous heritage, which was respectful of Australia, which was respectful of her sport, and particularly respectful of those who she played against. Much was given her, and it seems to me that in her generosity, she was able to give that back and inspire. And so consequently today, she has set up a situation to support young Indigenous boys and girls in their sporting careers, not just tennis. To those who have been given much, much will be expected of them. And finally, I talk probably about how we all value money or how we look at money. Now, if you look through a window, if you go home and you look out the street, you look through a glass window, what you'll see is the world going on out there through the glass. But if you put a mirror in front of that window, now the mirror is a veneer of silver. I think it was actually mercury, but it's a veneer of silver. When you put a mirror in front of that window, what you are going to see is yourself hidden by the silver, by what I'm going to say is the wealth, if you like. We're blinded by the wealth which silver represents. We just see ourselves. And that can become very problematic. There's no problem with reflecting on myself and my situation in life, but if I keep that there and block out the rest of the world, then I have effectively cut my relationship off with neighbour and therefore with God. And we need to be very careful of that. And if it is money, and if it is wealth, and if it is power, or if it is authority misused that puts that silver veneer there, then we need to do everything we can to bring that down. I commend to you again the second reading, St. Paul writing to Timothy, because it says, pray for those in leadership. The Queen will be buried the day after tomorrow. King Charles III is there. That particular letter says, and pray for kings, people in leadership. At every single Mass that we share in together, we pray for our Archbishop, who happens to be Christopher, who leads our church. Not about power, but his authority. So that's built into the structure of Catholic thought and Catholic social justice. We do pray for those in authority. Why do we do that? Because you know them, and you know that all of those who lead, they need every prayer that they can get.